the Berkshires, without a doubt one of the most culturally rich places on earth. From Tanglewood to Jacob's Pillow, Shakespeare and Company to Mass Mocha, it has something for everyone. But for a while, that was not true if you were an opera lover. Since the closing of the Berkshire Opera Company in 2009, there had been no fully staged opera in the Berkshires. Enter the Berkshire Opera Festival, now in its third season and the Berkshire's only home for fully staged opera. This year, the Berkshire Opera Festival returns to Pittsfield's beautiful Colonial Theater for three performances of Verdi's Rigoletto at the end of August. On a recent beautiful summer morning, I got a chance to drive out to Great Barrington to speak with the co-founder and general director of the Berkshire Opera Festival, Jonathan Loy, about his goals for the festival, about their upcoming production of Rigoletto, and more generally about the relevancy of opera in our modern world. We started out talking about what makes the Berkshires special.
I mean, anyone that's been here, the second you kind of drive into the Berkshires, you're taken to this magical place. It's, for me, one of the most beautiful places in the world. It has an energy to it. And as you say, you know, the beauty combined with the culture makes it a place that people want to be. And, you know, there's everything. There's dance, there's classical, there's Shakespeare, there's everything in between. And there was not opera in what is the most culturally rich place in the world, as far as I'm concerned, in the summer. So it was only fair to bring opera back, fully produced opera. Because people do opera up here, but concert version, semi-staged, this is the real deal. This is fully produced opera.
Talk to me about what the Berkshire Opera Festival is hoping to achieve and sort of what makes it unique then in this area.
Sure. One, because it is the only fully producing opera company, and the intention was to bring fully produced opera back at the highest quality and make it accessible to people. And so if you look at our season this summer, which is, you know, it's small. We do one production, and this year we're doing one recital, but it's a free recital. And that recital is with our principal artist from the show. You know, we have, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest singers in the world coming here to the Berkshires. Maria Valdez, who's singing Gilda, is having a major career now. She just sang Gilda at San Francisco Opera. Jonathan Tettelman, also the Duke, having the brink of a major career. So we're very lucky to have him now before we can't afford him anymore. Sebastian Catana is one of the handful of true Verdi baritones singing in the world today. It's very specialized, and really, maybe I can name five people off the top of my head, maybe, that really can sing that way. And Sebastian is one of them. He's sought after all over the world. Maya Lachiani is gorgeous Israeli mezzo. I work with her at the Met, and we've done other things together. This is luxury casting for Maddalena, because Maddalena, in, you know, there's no small roles, but Maddalena is a smaller role. We really only see her in the third act. So to have someone like Maya is like the greatest thing in the whole world. Joe Baron is Spada Fucile, young, incredible bass. I just worked with him at the Met also. We're so lucky. Oh, and I should say Monterone is John Cheek, one of the most famous basses in the world, who happens to live here in the Berkshires. We have a great relationship with him, and we're so lucky to have him join us. The vision of the company is we would love to be doing three productions here in the summer, in addition to then the ancillary programming. And the three productions would look something like this. We would continue to do the main stage production. The second slot production would be our second stage show, which would be a lesser known work, a newly commissioned work, or an American work, or a combination of all those things. And then the third slot show would be what would come from the development of our education department here, which would house the young artist program. Most regional companies have a young artist program, and when you say young artist, you're talking early 20s to early 30s, people that are done with school and need to get experience under their belt, singers that could be on the brink of major international careers, and they need to do a role or two. And Brian and I both strongly believe that there is no point in having a young artist program unless they're doing a production. Because you can have a young artist program and do master classes and Italian lessons and German lessons and French, but that's not the same thing as doing a show. So that third slot show would be the young artists. They get to do their own full production. Again, it could be anywhere in the Berkshires. And that could also focus on American works as well.
It's very simply, how do you pull that off?
Yeah, you pull it off by not doing it too quickly. So people that have kind of been following us, we were doing two recitals and a main stage. With this addition of a free recital, we decided to just simplify the season because the worst thing we could do is try to add programming on before we stabilize our fundraising. Obviously, we're here, which means we're raising the money, but we need to... if you look at fundraising as a pyramid, if you have your base supporters of, you know, $100 to $1,000, which is a lot of people in theory, and then at the top of the pyramid you have, and this is true, I would say, almost every opera company in the country, you know, 3 to 5, maybe 7, and that's pushing it, very large donors that fund the company. And that is true at the highest level, even at the Metropolitan Opera. You know, one person goes away and the company folds. And that's also part of this whole, how is opera relevant? How do you continue it going? How do you educate people to make them want to donate money and buy tickets and all of that? But we need to stabilize our fundraising and become sustainable. And until we really are comfortable that we're there, you know, all of these things that I'm talking about won't be put into place. And it will be one thing at a time.
Does having big donors like that, somebody who ideally an individual or two individuals mm-hmm. who are funding an entire festival, mm-hmm. does that have an impact on artistic vision when this person gives all this money and then says, well, because I've given this money, I want to see this?
It can't work that way. We're lucky that it hasn't. And also, you know, in terms of our board, Brian and I wrote into our bylaws that a board member may have no input on artistic decisions. And I think a good board member who is reasonable, no matter how much money they're giving, would understand that that's not their place. Their place is to understand the fiscal responsibility of the company and to keep a check on what on that Brian and I are doing that. But Brian and I make the artistic decisions in the company.
Let's talk about opera and opera in the 21st century. On your website, in your mission statement, you say that we believe that opera is a living, breathing, relevant art form. What makes it that living, breathing, relevant art form in this 21st century?
So Rigoletto, we're dealing with abuse of women, male power, rape, murder. The stories carry an unbelievable weight to them. And as a stage director, feel a lot of... I need to communicate in this day and age, this hashtag Me Too time, what Rigoletto is about, you know, and it's so relevant to today's audience, young and old. I think everyone would relate to what's going on.
How have you gone about that in your staging and your vision in this production of Rigoletto?
Sure. I'm going to say that this is traditional in the sense that I am setting it in the period in which it was written, which is the 16th century. To that end, it's very abstract and minimal. And when I say traditional, I mean that I'm being 100% true to the text. It's not being updated. What we've done is Charles Kane, the costume designer, and I have decided that basically that this is a black and white production. Our costumes are being built from scratch, all black and white, so that the women, and there are very few women in the show, which makes it even more impactful. You have Gilda, the daughter of Rigoletto, you have Giovanna, her caretaker, and you have Maddalena, the whore, and then you have the Countess Ciprano. They're all white on white brocade. The chorus men are all black on black velvet brocade, and the male principals are basically 50 shades of gray. I've added dance to this. I have two principal dancers, a male and a female, and what I want that to represent, the male dancer is kind of an incarnation of the Duke and every man in its worst possible way. And you'll see that play out from the beginning of the prelude through the very end. And the female dancer is every woman.
What do you hope that people who come to see this will get from it? I mean, there's so much in there, from the protective father who's led to murder mm-hmm. to the Duke and Sparafucile, one of the absolute worst bad guys in all of opera.
The murderer.
Yeah. What do you hope that people will get from this production?
That's a hard question, but without being trite, I want to say that when I create my productions, the most important thing to me is that I put something that is aesthetically beautiful on the stage. What can compare to going into a theater, especially a theater like the Colonial, with 744 seats, with the kind of voices that we put in there, and literally feel a human voice that is unamplified wrap itself around you and give you this literally, we use the word visceral experience, because you can feel the voice wrap itself around you. And there's nothing that can compare to that. And our job is to get people into the seats so that they can experience that, because that's different than YouTube and Spotify and Apple Music. I want the audience to come and sit down and escape from reality. And even though we're dealing with things that are really devastating, the music is so beautiful. I want the audience to sit down, watch what goes on, have these amazing voices sweep over them, look at the stage, and go into this journey with them. And they should take away whatever they want to take away from it, whatever it means to them. But for them to have a beautiful out-of-body experience for, you know, 2.5 hours.
The other thing I think is cool, I mean, this cast is like to die for. Yeah. But one of the cool things, and maybe this has changed in the years, but what I saw from the beginning was that you were trying to pull your orchestra and your singers locally, that you weren't bringing in, you know, a section of the Met Pit, that you were trying to bring in musicians that are living here.
I would say probably majority are local, and by local we mean tri-state area, so they can drive here. And I know there are also Berkshire people. The orchestra, I know Brian is so excited for the orchestra this season. He feels like he's really just nailed it down. And the chorus is completely local. So we're very proud that the big ensembles of the Berkshire Opera Festival are mainly local. I should also say are the Compromario, or the smaller roles, which are the women, the page, Giovanna, and the usher are all local people from our chorus, actually, that we reserve those roles for them. Yeah, we're proud of that.
It's really cool that there is a local, like
there's talent, you know, here.
The talent, yes. And it's like this world view of all these musicians who are having these big careers or on the verge of these major careers, and at the same time being able to keep it at home, where in this special place that makes this festival tick. I have one more question. So we already talked about the future and your vision for this company, and Brian's vision for the company, and where you want it to go. You talk about on your website about how you want to be doing a wide range of operas. Mm-hmm. How do you go about choosing what you're going to do? And I imagine you're in that process right now.
Absolutely.
What you're going to do next
season. Yeah, we're fully cast already for 2019. And we'll start thinking about our five-year anniversary, which will be 2020 very soon, I'm sure. It's a very complicated process. So 2016, we chose Butterfly because we wanted something with name recognition, but that also was not... We said this a lot in that first year when we were doing interviews. We didn't want to do Traviata, Carmen, Boheme in that first year because we didn't want to be that company. Because I think the second you do that, you set up the expectation that that's all you do, and then no one will want to come and see when you do Ariadne of Naxos. So it was a huge risk then to do Ariadne of Naxos in the second season, and it bit us in the butt a little bit. But I know Brian also, we don't regret it for a second. It was really important for the company. It was a huge critical success. And I'm sorry for the people that felt like they couldn't take the chance to come and see something they didn't know the title of. But I'm hoping as we grow and the audience get to understand who we are and the high level of artistic quality we bring, they'll just jump in no matter what it is that we're doing. And that was the main reason for doing Ariadne. And then, of course, we said, okay, we need to do something very recognizable. Rigoletto, but I should also say Rigoletto is something that's very special to both Brian and I. It's a piece, it was kind of the first exposure for both of us to opera. As both of us as little kids. And it was also the first piece I ever directed professionally. And it's one of those pieces now at this process in the game for me, I'm listening to Rigoletto every day. And I still cry at the end because it's so devastating. And I'm going to cry just saying that now. But even pieces like that, as popular as they are, they always have something to say. And so I hope our audience understands that. And then when we decide to do something that they don't recognize, that they have the chutzpah to just come with us. And I think people will start to realize that.
The performances are?
August 25th, 1 p.m. matinee. So you can go both to Rigoletto and to Tanglewood Gala in the same day. August 28th, 7:30 p.m. and August 31st, 7:30 p.m. Everything is on BerkshireOperaFestival.org. And also, honestly, come to the free concert on August 15th, 7:30 p.m., St. James Place in Great Barrington. Again, everything's on the website, but you do have to reserve your tickets for the free concert. Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Loy, thank you so much for taking a few minutes here and talking to me about the exciting future of the Berkshire Opera Festival. Looking very much forward to it.
Thank you.